Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. Your usual Monday host, Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI station manager, together with assistant manager Rebecca Reuter and operations manager Evan Taylor, are at the Grassroots Radio Conference in Albany, New York. I hope they had as nice weather in Albany as we had here yesterday and over the weekend. But that's about to end. By tomorrow, we're going to have a cold front bringing a high of 54 and a low of 44 that night. For the rest of the week, we'll have sporadic rain and high winds and overcast. By the weekend, we can look forward to sunny days in the low 70s. But there's still an 80% chance of rain. Before we go to our main story, which is an interview with mayoral candidate Victoria Sipinski, we have the weekly news roundup brought to you by the Iowa Informer, an alternative online news magazine based in Ames that covers state and local politics and culture. Read more at iowainformer.com. In an unusual but legal agreement, Congressman Steve King has employed his son Jeff and daughter-in-law Lindsay as campaign staffers, even in non-election years, the Des Moines Register reported last week. Their employment dates back to at least as far as 2004, Federal Election Commission records show, and total more than $800,000 paid for through campaign donations. Steve King explained, "There's no possible way that I could hire somebody off the street that could do what these two do, let alone have the family loyalty that goes along with it." King has served in Congress since 2002. Last Monday, the State Appeals Board approved a controversial lawsuit settlement against the Iowa Senate GOP that will cost Iowa taxpayers $1.75 million. The lawsuit was filed by Kirsten Anderson, a former Republican communications director who alleged there was a boys' club culture of widespread sexual harassment among the Republican state caucus at the State House. Anderson was separately awarded $2.2 million in damages in July. Governor Kim Reynolds called demands for Bill Dix to step down from his role as the state's majority leader in response to the scandal ridiculous, and an attempt to turn it into a political issue. Evidence continues to mount that former Governor Terry Branstad's controversial decision to turn management of the state's $4.2 billion Medicaid program to three for-profit corporations is harming at-risk patients who depend on it for health care. In March, state quarterly reports showed a spike in complaints from patients who lost coverage or began receiving reduced benefits. And late last month, the Register reported that Central Iowa nursing homes have started refusing service to ventilator patients, citing insufficient and late payments from Medicaid providers. The Washington Post reported Thursday that President Trump, in August, attempted to sabotage efforts by Iowa officials to modify how the state administers its Affordable Care Act program after reading an article about the efforts in the Wall Street Journal. State Insurance Commissioner Doug Oman wants to implement a stopgap measure to make the marketplace more competitive in an effort to lower costs by replacing subsidies with tax credits, a conservative proposal opposed by many Democrats. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds made the stopgap measure a top priority, even meeting with federal officials about it in July. An application for a waiver to approve the changes is pending. Today through Thursday, Iowa State University will hold a series of four public forums, each introducing one of the finalists to become the next president of the university. Names of the finalists, along with their curriculum vitae, will be posted on ISU's website on the day before they appear on campus. The Iowa Board of Regents plans to select a new president at the meeting on October 23rd. Currently, former University of Northern Iowa president Benjamin Allen is serving as ISU's interim president. He replaced Stephen Leith, who left for Auburn University last fall amid a scandal over the misuse of university-owned airplanes. Leith announced Friday that his former chief of staff, Miles Lackey, who followed him to ISU from the University of Northern Iowa, will join him in the same assistant manager role at Auburn in January. This is KHOI Community Radio. Last April, Mayor Ann Campbell announced her intention to retire at the end of this year. Thus, after 12 years, Ames residents will be electing a new mayor when they go to the voting booth in November 7th. In the upcoming weeks, there will be a number of public forums and debates between the two candidates, Victoria Sapinski and John Hala. A listing of these will be posted on the KHOI.org's homepage. Meanwhile, we've invited Victoria Sapinski and John Hala to come to Local Talk for a conversation about who they are and how they are approaching the position of Ames mayor. We hope to have John here soon. Victoria came by last week, and we recorded this conversation between her and Ursula Rudenberg. Ursula started by asking Victoria to describe her overall vision as a candidate.
Connecting the power of the community, looking for those ways to make sure that we are appreciating and engaging a variety of people in this community who have different histories, different experiences, different expertise. I say with experience that it's messier when you have a lot of ideas on the table, but in the long run, having more people participate and having more ideas results in more creative and more innovative results. So that is the core of what we're doing this during this campaign and what we want to bring forward. And I always say we, because this is not a one-person endeavor. I am the face and the voice of what we are doing, but we are an energy that has, I believe, changed in this city and in this country over the last months. There's been a lot of frustration about what's going on nationally, and I am encouraged by meeting people who want to make a difference, who want to get involved, and are seeing local government as a means of making things happen, making our community more welcoming, more caring, and more inclusive. I think communication is the base of moving forward, that we need to make sure that we have strong relationships. We know we have a lot of differences. So the challenge is finding those places where we can have some commonality and do some things together in this community. And I use the Ames Progressive Alliance as a model, a group of volunteers, and I always like to emphasize volunteers, who took ideas to actions. We talked about reaching out to diverse communities in a variety of perspectives, and through putting together inclusive Ames, for example, individuals were able to talk about which issues were important to them, and they took those issues and found other people with whom they connected and moved forward with them, like encouraging the city to designate itself as a safe city and working with the schools on issues of inequity in learning. That came out of inclusive Ames. Out of Ames Progressive Alliance, we worked with the city to move forward on this solar array that we're going to be building. It was supposed to be this fall, but it looks like maybe it's going to be in the spring. But nonetheless, we helped do some of that research. We worked as people not in government collaboratively to make that happen. We also worked with the Human Services Grant Program, the monies that were sitting in a fund balance, which will now be used to assist human service agencies here in Ames with capital needs improvements. After Orlando, we connected with the Body of Christ Church after one too many black men was shot in our country, and we created conversations with the police department, and those are ongoing. And these are small steps, but I think that's a wonderful model that I think we can spread throughout this community, and that's my goal.
So when you say that this we you're referring to has kind of a new spirit, explain again who the we is.
And I'm glad you asked, because I'm certainly speaking much further beyond the Ames Progressive Alliance. I am door knocking actively. I am attending coffees with all different folks, different ages, and I'm hearing it from a number of people, the desire to be involved, to make sure that we are doing things in this community to, some use the word resist, offset, be better than what we're seeing in this country. Does everybody on board with that? Maybe not. But maybe that's the challenge and that's the goal, not to have everybody think like me or think like others, but to find where it is that we have those commonalities so that we're all under that umbrella of we.
What was the spark that motivated you to run for mayor?
Well, I had been thinking about it for a long time because some individuals had suggested that I consider it after I left my post on the Ames City Council.
You were a city councilwoman for
Yes,
how
I
long?
Represented the 4th Ward.
For how long were you on the council?
Well, I was only there 2 years because of redistricting, and that changed the normal 4-year term to 2 years. But I've kept busy. The model of seeing that we can get people engaged and also hearing that there's a desire to know more about issues. I'm finding that individuals are getting information from a variety of places, and we need to make sure that we're connecting through all those avenues and looking for ways for a two-way conversation so that we're getting those ideas back and putting those people together. I guess being connected in the community in some ways, I felt like I can do this because I do know a lot of people. I've been really fortunate. I've been on a number of boards. I was on the Access Women's Shelter. I was with Ames Reads. I was with the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Most recently, Friendship Arc Homes and Community Services. We build houses for adults with intellectual disabilities. I'm actually still working with them. And I just also, for best practices, just left the state ACLU board. I also worked at the university as the director of conference services. And through my connections, but through my husband, through my parents lived in this community. They moved here in the early 70s. And sometimes more than all those other things, my 17-year-old child, I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of different people. And door knocking is just that additional eye opener. You never know what you're going to find when you knock on a door. And it's always an amazing story. I knocked on someone's door the other day. They weren't even on my list. And I just thought, oh, there's an inclusive AIMS sign in the yard. I'm going to just knock. Iraqi refugees. We're new best friends now, and their story was amazing. And I'd love to record them talking about why it's important to vote, because they know why it's important. I think I can make a difference. I think I can connect people. I think it's a great time that there is an energy out there, that there is an enthusiasm to do things well at a local level. And I think this election in November is going to be very telling across the country as to how these school board elections and city council and mayoral elections turn out. I do believe that I am well connected. I've had those opportunities in this community to hear from a variety of voices and have a broad understanding of the differences and the similarities of community members, how they want Ames to look and be in the future. Many of us choose to be here. It is a great community in so many ways. We could live someplace else. We choose Ames. And so it's wonderful in that way. We have a lot of opportunities. We have stable employment, but we also have everything else that's going on in this country. We have poverty. We have homelessness. We have human trafficking, drugs, gangs, name it. And I have an understanding of those things. It's easy to not see them, and I don't blame people when you don't see them. Sometimes you have to go looking for it. Mm-hmm. But I think those are components that will make me a good mayor, which is why I've decided to do it. I could be doing in some other things. This is not about me. This is about the opportunity that has presented itself to do well in this setting.
Recently, Mayor Ann Campbell spoke about how the mayor is actually a hands-off part of the city government. She didn't see herself as policy setting. There's a name for it, which I don't know, but it's a hands-off mayor and chairing the meetings, creating the boards behind the scenes on city government instead of a leading mayor. Do you see continuing in that tradition, or how do you see that in your mind in terms of your relationship to the staff and the city council?
I've known Ann for a long time. and we're friends. We're actually in the same book club. But I think it's fair to say that we see the functions of a mayor differently. The system is called weak mayor, and I think it's a very unfortunate word because actually all it refers to is the fact that there is a city manager. But the job is not. There is an opportunity to have the bully pulpit. There is an opportunity to bring people, new voices, into the discussion. There is an opportunity to look at those boards and commissions and perhaps rethink some of them that are 90 years old, that maybe a new direction to fit the times would be appropriate. Maybe we need to create some other types of boards or commissions or strategic planning groups or whatever you want to call them, looking at things like affordable housing, which recently I said 20 years and somebody corrected me and said, no, we've talked about that for 30 years. So there are some topics, issues for which in this community we have individuals who have passion and have experience and history and expertise. I've been going to the university. For an example, I was in the psychology department. I said, if we were having a conversation about mental health, would you come and sit with us? And the answer was, of course we would. So it's that asking, it's that engaging, it's that appreciating all those things that we have in this community. I think there is an opportunity to be very connected and maybe looking at the role a little bit differently.
How many boards or commissions can a mayor propose or put together? Can you do them at will?
You know, I don't know the answer if there is a specific number. But I think at will, one could have ad hoc committees, strategic planning groups, task forces, whatever you want to call them, looking at specific issues.
Other than affordable housing, what would you like to address with these commissions?
Well, one thing I would like to do is make sure that we are very diverse and reflecting the population in our community. And that means including young people, high schoolers. Other cities are doing it, and the stories you always hear is the resistance to having young people, oh, we're going to have to teach them. And then it turns out to be the other way around because we don't know what they're thinking and what they would like to see in their community, and it's theirs also. Most of these issues fall under an umbrella of health. Health and wellness is what most things that we do in a city setting policy connect to individuals who live in our community. And part of that would be our youth, not just youth being on boards, but making sure that we're providing for any young person who, when they're 18 and ready to go off to whatever it is that they want to do, that we have made sure that they have all those tools. I don't believe that we can leave all that to the schools anymore for a variety of reasons. I meet children who've never been to the Furman Aquatic Center. Why is that? I just heard that one of our schools is above 70% free and reduced lunch. We have kids who need some help, and I think as a community, we need to look at some ways to be offering some assistance. So that might be a group that's just focused on that. Or relationships, maybe a group that's consistently meeting with the school district, for example, rather than a once-a-year meeting.
You're saying a youth group that would meet with the school board?
No, I'm saying youth being on any time that we do
any
kind of committee, board, commission, mm-hmm. that young people should be part of that diverse mix. Mm-hmm. But I'm also suggesting, because we were just speaking hypothetically about what types of mm-hmm. new groups might exist, one might be focused on youth and making sure that we're bringing together all those different resources that we have in our community to be able to offer the best to mm-hmm. our young. Long-term planning, that's what local government, a big portion of it is making sure you're considering all those different facets when moving forward of how people's lives, how this community is affected. Mm-hmm. And at large of the world, if we're doing things like increasing our carbon footprint, probably we need to be a little more future thinking.
You've been on the city council yourself. How do you see yourself working with the city council?
Well, I have met with all the city council members since I've been on council. So I know them all. I've met with them. It's been part of what we did with the Ames Progressive Alliance, because that model was working with people, working with local government, that successes come much more readily when you work with people rather than demanding that they do things. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity to spend more time together and to learn. There are levels of details that some current members are going to know much more readily than I.
I'm speaking with Victoria Shapinski, candidate for mayor in the city of Ames. And Victoria, you have several times mentioned the Ames Progressive Alliance. Could you explain what that is for those who may not know?
A group of us got together a few years ago wanting to assist local government in moving some initiatives forward. We were seeing a few occasions where great ideas were put forward with no deadlines, and so we thought, let's see what we can do. And so we worked with people who already had the community solar initiative in place, but we brought that extra component of moving it through city government so that it is now, it's happening, it's going to happen. And we did that with a few other initiatives like the Human Services Grant Program. And we've also tried to connect people, to bring those diverse communities, various perspectives together so that we are working towards having a place where you don't have to hang out with each other, but we know each other on the street, and we know that we all live in Ames. And that came from bringing one of the black churches in town together with the police department, addressing issues that were happening nationally. But, of course, anything that's happening nationally is happening here in Ames, too.
Could you explain the word progressive?
Progressive seems to have turned into a number of definitions over time, but where I started with it and where I remain is it's my values. If I present myself as a progressive, it means that I want to look at creative new solutions as we move forward. It means I want to include diverse voices. It means that I am caring about all people, no matter what your religion, creed, race, who you love, the list goes on, that isn't the determining factor of how decisions are made. It's part of making sure that everyone's part of that conversation. I'm not status quo. You know, I think it makes more sense for me to get up in the morning and say, I wonder what cool new thing will happen today, rather than I'm going to get up and go, let's just do everything the same way we did it yesterday.
Victoria, what are issues that you anticipate for the next mayor?
I mean, we can go down a list, but the top two issues when I've been door knocking, and it will be of no surprise, is the proliferation of apartment buildings coupled with the explosion in our student population that has put very immediate pressures on our community, not just in housing, but also all the services that come along with that, you know, the utilities and police and fire. The Scan neighborhood is particularly impacted because of the very rapid rate of single-family homes turning into rental properties.
What is the Scan neighborhood?
Oh, I'm sorry. South of Campus Neighborhood Association.
The neighborhood south of campus has older houses.
Yeah.
Kind of
so
along
Country
Welch
Club, and Ash, mm-hmm. down Welch.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. That particular neighborhood has been very good at gathering information and speaking about this particular issue, but it's affecting everyone in this community. So that's a little bit of this much larger issue of when the population of students grows, how that affects our community, how we work together with the university to make sure that neighborhoods are protected, but also that students are protected. We need to make sure that there is housing for students. We need to make sure it's safe. We need to make sure they're not taken advantage of. I mean, there are so many layers to that. So that will be the big, you know, that will continue to be large. Though apparently it's the population is plateauing, so that's part of the long-term planning. Do we continue to plan or to build more apartment buildings if, in fact, we see that student enrollment is leveling out? The other thing that people are talking a lot about, and I think is pretty exciting, is the idea of recycling. They're coming from other places. They're seeing recycling in other communities. In 1974, we built this incinerator, and it was cutting-edge technology, but it is not anymore. I'm also amazed how many people I meet who are hauling their recyclables to Boone. So a recycling center, I think, is pretty exciting. The idea of some figuring out how to get a lot of the organics out of our waste, which apparently is a huge percentage. I had that number, but I didn't bring it with me. Other communities have figured out how to compost that material. So there are some other ideas on there about how you incentivize the reduction of garbage, how you pull those organics out, and move toward renewable energy systems. And we pay, our utility bills, electrical utility bills, are subsidizing the burning of garbage. I mean, that's basically what we're paying for. Mm-hmm. We are connected to a wind farm, and I think we pull 11% of our off of that. We'll now be increasing that with the solar farm. I think we need to make sure that we're incentivizing individual installations on residential and commercial. We're moving in the right direction. We might need to move a little bit faster.
What about schools in Ames?
There's a good deal of relationship building that needs to go on there. I think we need to figure out ways that we can continue to work together and work better together.
What do you see as issues the school system is facing?
Certainly in the news, the whole thing with the pool and the operating costs, and there have been conversations going on with how to move forward with that. I'm not afraid to voice my opinion in that if we are, as a community, going to assist with the financing in the way of operational costs for a new pool, I think every child should learn how to swim. In coffees that I've attended, there have been many voices suggesting that they would have liked to see more participation and more information on the idea of a new high school. And personally, I guess I'm in a similar boat. I don't know if it's a great idea or not a great idea because I didn't have a great understanding of what dollars would have bought us in the way of renovation and perhaps upgrading of current facilities.
Can you give a little bit backstory on that?
The current high school, the last renovation, there have been several renovations to that building. The last one was done 12 years ago. So there was a proposal to build a new high school or to renovate what we currently have. And so it seems to be moving towards a new high school. But I'm just relaying what I've heard when I've been out coffees, door knocking, whatever, is this resounding concern that we perhaps didn't have sufficient information, which kind of speaks to the whole, my point of my campaign or the core of the campaign is how do we get more information to people who want that information? Because there's a complaint out there. We didn't know. We don't know what those dollars, because we're looking at somewhere between, my understanding, $95 million and $110-$120 million project. And so we'd like to know, or they'd like to know, what the options are. So when you say schools, those would be the two things that sort of float to the top right now as far as issues are concerned, the building or not building or renovating of the current high school and where we're going to go forward with a cold water pool, because that's what is needed for swimming teams. But then there's also this new healthy life center, which is in the study phase right now, which personally I'm very excited about, which is a collaboration currently between Heartland Senior Services, the hospital, the city, and the university, and maybe the school, to have a warm water pool and a variety of other amenities in one building, not just geared toward our aging population, but a variety of ages. Which brings me to one other thing, amenities. Because people ask me, well, what are you doing for business? What about jobs? There is a growing body of research, plus the Chamber of Commerce will tell you that what keeps business here, what brings business here, what keeps people here, what brings people here is quality of life. That it's about amenities. It's about having pools. It's about making sure that we have walkable streets, that we have bike paths, that we are providing, creating opportunities for all people of all ages and abilities to live healthy lives, enjoyable lives in our community. So things like this healthy life center speaks so directly to what keeps people here, what keeps business here, what brings business here.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an approach to city planning in general in terms of where you see the city should grow, what you think the Lincoln Corridor should produce as that's being paid more attention to, and how would you participate in all that as the mayor?
Oh, a month or maybe less ago, there was a city council workshop that brought in an urban planning expert talking about comprehensive planning, which is the new term for land use policy planning. And it was so exciting. It was about long term. It was about themes, about how you look at how you grow your city, for example, under the theme of health, so that everything that you're doing, you think, well, is this a healthy choice and who's it healthy for? And there were others. So that is something that is just being presented now. The old plan needs to be redeveloped. The new thinking of how to go forward with it is very exciting. The city planner, I think it was one of the most excited I'd seen him. That's what planners like to do, right? They want a plan. But I think when we do have a plan, we need to stick with the plan. Too often, and we have requests probably at every meeting for a change in zoning and a change in the land use policy plan. So my question is, why do we have a plan? So let's make a plan that we're going to stick with the plan. And I understand, you know, it's like people. There are always exceptions, you know, definitely exceptions, but not every time. I think we've gotten into this habit of just saying, well, I'll just ask for a change and I'll get the change.
Mm-hmm.
The Lincoln Corridor plan you asked about, I personally would have preferred to not see building going on while we were still in the plan. It would have made more sense, I think, to complete it and then to go forward from there. But we need to be a little bolder. We need to sometimes say no. And no can be temporary. When you say yes, it's forever. So I would encourage that occasionally we just say no.
One of the things that have been controversial in the last few years has been tax abatements for businesses moving in. You certainly could have influence.
And these are the types of things that I can talk to. Ames is a community with stable, well-paying employers, the DOT, the hospital, the university, USDA. No businesses that are proposing that they come to Ames haven't done their market research. When I was on council, Petco and Sports Authority were a great example. They came and asked for a tax abatement because that's what you do. You always ask. And we said no. And they built because they knew that it was an amazing piece of land from a retailer's perspective between Target and Walmart.
So you're saying we're attractive enough without tax
abatements? We are attractive enough. And that no one would consider talking to us if they hadn't done their market research. And it also speaks to what's happening around the country with incentives and tax abatements, of which tax abatements and incentives, is this: if you're an attractive enough place to be, the tables are turning. Where, I think I heard a story the other day about Santa Cruz. They're saying, if you want to come here, you're going to help pay for the local soccer team. You're going to participate in making sure there's housing for your workers. It's changing. And that's why I would like to see us also embrace this idea, because it's good for all of us. And if we all help make us have more amenities, we all benefit and we attract.
How do you actually participate in those decisions as a mayor?
I envision myself talking more and relaying what I'm hearing from the community and also what I'm learning through research. I would hope that much of that work can be done prior to a council meeting, where if we're going to have a certain issue, you know, if there's particular reading in that area that's going to assist us in making more informed decisions, I would like to play a role in that. Having more voices at the table makes a difference. Knowing about meetings, knowing about topics further in advance, figuring out how to get that information to community members so that they can weigh in and bring what they know.
What do you see as possible challenges as a mayor?
I think it's always challenging when someone's suggesting that we do some experimentation and try something new, that it is easier to just say, well, we've always done it this way. And sometimes things that we've always done that way are fine and it makes sense.
Do you think that that you'll be able to work with the city staff?
Yeah, I have a very good relationship with city staff.
Do you think you'll be able to work well with the business community in Ames?
I hope so. I have an empty checkbook to prove it, that I already work pretty well. I mean, I'm a big proponent of shopping locally. I mean, I went up and down Main Street a few weeks ago, and I know everybody there. I mean, we are connected. I'm understanding what their concerns are. And the business community is part of the community. And I guess I'm troubled a bit that we make a subset or a different group out of the business community as though there's a group of individuals that don't have all those other same concerns that we share for making mm-hmm. ourselves better.
Business in Ames goes beyond local shops. We have the research park and we have a lot of kind of new companies springing up. Business enterprise, do you have a vision for that?
We need to make sure that we are encouraging and assisting in any way we can to help people make living wages and have fulfilling employment. That's what allows us to live our lives. I'm very excited about what's going out at the university, at the research park. I've been out there a couple of times. I know Mike Crum from long ago. What I'd love to see is helping direct many of those startups and new businesses to doing their experimentation and trial runs here in Ames.
You touched on this before, but a lot of people who work in services in Ames can no longer really live here. What do you see as important in addressing that? Or not?
Well, I've been talking about this for a long time. When I ran the last time, I was talking about doing a housing study. We don't know what people want. We talk about affordable housing, but what does that mean? Iowa City is doing co-housing. A lot of millennials and aging population are very interested in that. There's a new move in tiny houses. Do people want that? Are there people who are living in McCarlsburg who would be fine with living in McCarlsburg if we had better transportation? We don't know the answers to those things. And I think a housing study would really help us make better long-term decisions. And this is where creativity comes in. We're not building housing that is affordable, not just for young families or singles, but for our aging population who want to downsize and would like to remain in Ames. So there are a variety of demographics that I think are looking for an opportunity, and that will be a big challenge. And it is the elephant in the room, and it is the thing that I hear spoken about and has been for a long time. And do I know the answer? No. But we need to just move forward by finding out, you know, getting some people together who are thinking about these things and get some ideas on the table.
Mm-hmm. Finally, as a mayor, you are in a way the person who will be the public face of it in many situations. What is the spirit that you feel you would embody as our representative?
Well, I like to think that I portray some level, just because I'm lucky and healthy, of energy and enthusiasm. And also, it's already happened. I mean, I can't just run out of my garden to the grocery store anymore in my dirty pants. And it'll be an excuse to buy new clothes. Thank you very much. But yes, that is a big part of it. And I think making people feel welcome when we have visitors come to this community. I did it for, what was it, Special Olympics one year when everyone was at Hilton Auditorium, and it's energizing from both sides. But always to be remembering that it's not about me, it's about the people who have chosen Ames as the place to spend the weekend or the evening or to have their conference or to do whatever it is that they're doing here and to make sure that things are going well for them.
If you were going to visualize a symbol, how would you symbolize the spirit of this community?
Well, I like that our color is green, and I would like to think that that's how we're moving forward and seen as a community that is welcoming to new students, new ideas, new opportunities, and being cool.
Okay, thank you. Victoria, how long have you lived in Ames?
My parents moved here in the early 70s, and this is where home was, even though I was off in a number of other places, but I always had a bedroom here and a basement where all my stuff was. I moved back here. I was here for a while in the 80s when my mother was ill, and then I moved in 2000 when it was becoming evident that they were aging and I needed to be closer to home.
And then I met my husband. We bought a house. We brought a kid into the family. And then we got a dog and two cats, just in case anybody thought that I might have some extra free time. But here we go.
And what was your educational background?
I started my undergraduate work at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And because of my mother's various illnesses, strokes and things like that, while I was here helping take care of her, I finished my undergraduate work here at ISU. And then I went to graduate school at Simon Fraser University, which is in Vancouver, British Columbia. And I also studied in Ecuador. I studied Spanish.
And what did you get your master's degree in?
Communication. But communication has a little bit different bend in Canada than it does here, in that it's sort of the area where all those things like women's studies and technical changes and that all fell into under communication, which was messy but also kind of interesting of the people that fell into that pot.
Well, thank you. Why don't I give you the last word? How would you like to finish up the interview?
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity and all this time to talk about local government. And I certainly want to encourage everyone to vote. I have a website, votevictoria.org, and on there I have a list of upcoming forums. I encourage people to attend if possible, because that's where you learn about the differences of the various candidates. We also have a page about voting. If you've moved, even across the street, you need to re-register. If you're a student and your home base is someplace else, if you live in Ames right now, you should register to vote here. So I'm encouraging everyone to vote and to participate in local government, because local government matters now more than ever.
There are going to be a number of panels and debates,
yes,
and those will be listed on your website.
www.votevictoria.org. They are all listed on my website, except for the ISU student government, which looks like November 2nd, but that is just being planned today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Facebook page, too. So check us out on Facebook. We try to keep that updated. And so that gives a very broad understanding of issues that are important to me and my team. And we're always looking for suggestions and ideas now and most definitely as we go forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Candidate for Mayor Victoria Shopinski.
And this is KHOI Community Radio, where we hope soon to bring you an in-depth interview with Victoria's opponent, John Hala. But in the meantime, there is a League of Women Voters forum in the council chambers at Ames City Hall on Thursday, October 14th at 7 p.m. And you can find a listing of when and where the other discussions will be and the public debates from our website, KHOIFM.org. Our next guest is Keith Morgan, Emergency Management Coordinator, Story County Emergency Management. Hello, Keith.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
So what disasters are you going to be talking about?
Well, we're going to look at a couple of the different disasters that have happened throughout the nation. And we're not going to look at them just to look at them. What we're going to do is try and relate them to what happens here locally and some of the inner workings of emergency management so people can understand some of the different processes that happen during a disaster.
Okay. Where were you going to start?
Well, I was going to start with Hurricane Harvey that was down in Houston. As many people may or may not realize, that was a storm that was predicted for days to be coming on in, and that it did result in 70 deaths and about $80 to $100 billion worth of damage. But some of the key things that I'd like to discuss is, first off, there was long lead time to that, and I don't know if you've heard. There's some people that have talked about that, well, why didn't they evacuate all of Houston? And have you heard that?
No, I haven't.
Well, afterwards, a lot of people were saying, well, why didn't they evacuate Houston? Because some people were stranded in Houston. And one of the things that I'd like to emphasize to people is that emergency management is all risk management. It's just like you deciding whether you're going to take a raincoat with you today or not. You're going to base decisions on the information that you've been given. And within Houston, they did know that they were going to get a lot of rain. They did not know that they were going to get 52 inches of rain, which is more than anywhere in the United States has ever received in that amount of time. But they had decisions to make as to whether to evacuate people. And this is our leadership, and this is why we try and educate our what we call jurisdictional executives, mayors, people like that, on these kind of decisions. And it goes far beyond just telling everybody to get out. A city as large as Houston, just trying to get everybody out and to someplace else where they're not in more danger is a key part, or the danger of them being caught on these open roads because they've run out of gas and then the storm hits. And then there's also moving those that are elderly to get them out of there. Sometimes the stress of an evacuation can be such that it can actually cause them harm along the way. So that's one of those areas that is very important. That's why we try and work with our jurisdictional executives, give them the information, and actually test them through exercises on making these kind of decisions.
Well, you're talking about Houston, where the big effects were from floods. Well, that is something that we know about in Iowa. We don't have hurricanes, but we do have floods, but never 52 inches. Or have we had that much water accumulation?
We have not had 52 inches, but one of the items that we just did within my office is we had a company that was looking to do some activity in the floodplain. And we went back, again, talking about this risk management, and we looked at the floods of 2008 and 2010. If you remember right, those were some pretty rapidly occurring floods. And around here, we know our environment. If we get rain up in Hamilton County and northern Story County, we know about 12 hours later that that's going to impact here in Ames. But what we did is we worked with the National Weather Service, and we went back and looked at those storms and looked at when did the rain occur, when did they put out their first flood forecast for this area, how accurate was that flood forecast, and from the moment that they put out that flood forecast, where would it impact a specific area. So again, going back to this emergency management decision cycle, we were looking at when would we get a notification to the point where it was the last safe moment to make a decision whether to do something. And we came up again that it's about, we'll have 12 hours or so between a rain event up there and flooding down here. But we also saw that their initial predictions could be off by 1 or 2 feet when you added in extra rain after that.
And would you know which direction it was, 1 or 2 feet?
It went 1 or 2 feet to the high side. But that's because we were looking at the worst-case situation. We don't remember the situations where they predicted it was going to be high and then it was on the low side of it. So you'd really have to do a lot of working and looking and researching on those kinds of things.
Well, on the personal level, what are the kinds of things that people could do either to protect themselves and their families or to help, for example, be ready to sandbag if that should be necessary?
Well, we always talk about the three areas of preparation. We talk about the individual, and the individual, first off, again, be aware of your situation. Have a weather radio is one of the most important things for us to instantly get information out to you if there's something. To have a plan, to put together how, first off, you're going to protect yourself, where you're going to go, how you're going to communicate with your family, because that's one of the most important things, is spread out as we tend to be. You may live up like me up in Story City. I work down in Nevada. My kids were going to school in Roland Story or maybe possibly down in Ames. Have a way to communicate afterwards if an event occurs. Businesses, we want them to, again, be monitoring the situation, take care of their employees, encourage their employees to be prepared. In government, we work on that. That's why you've all hired me to look at how we bring everybody together. As a community, we need well-trained volunteers. Like you said, sandbagging, Once you get into this business and you see how sandbagging should be done, you see that it's rarely done properly to really maximize the effects of it. So if we can have a few people, a few organizations, volunteer organizations, that would be willing to work with us so we could train their people to be that cadre that goes out there and takes all these great volunteers we get during a disaster, but give them that little bit of direction so that we're so much more efficient and effective, that would really help us out.
Well, I have a question about on a different level, and that is pre-planning. For example, I think that there is some work with the mayors of the towns upriver and downriver from us that says, you know, if you build in a floodplain, for example, this is a really sore point in Ames discussion because we had a bad flood and then we figured if we just build our buildings a little higher, we could go right back to that floodplain and build again. Now, there isn't any mechanism for helping communities decide they're not going to do that.
Floodplain management that cascades on down from the federal level all the way on down through. Most of that is pointed towards the National Flood Insurance Program. If you want to qualify for national flood insurance, there are minimum standards that your structures and your facilities have to be made. Those are more pointed towards, though, an individual or a business as they build up in there. For the cities, for the use of that area, a lot of times that is more of a local decision. Again, it goes back to that risk management that goes into it. The Duff Corridor is well established, and it is going to be in a floodplain. And your decisions as to you tearing it all out and starting over someplace else, or trying to manage it is what the locals have to do. We're given a lot of power to do what we want to, but along with that comes a lot of responsibility, and somewhere down the road, if the flood situation changes, you could have to retrofit and do a lot of things that might cost you down the road. We don't know for certain what's going to happen down the road, but you do make those risk management decisions.
Our time is drawing to a close. Is there any urgent message that you wanted to deliver today that—
Everybody, just like you said, planned. But what we're really looking for is we need communities. We've developed these RATs, rapid action, for sheltering. Internal to a community, if you prepare and you get your teams ready to go, you'll be able to take care of yourself. And Iowans are noted for that. With a little bit of upfront practice and training and exercising, we can be very, very good at that.
Well, that's very encouraging. So thank you very much.
No problem.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we have just been hearing from Keith Morgan in emergency management here in central Iowa. And earlier we spoke with Mayor candidate Victoria Sapinski. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you'll need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. And stay tuned for the top of the hour. We have national news with Amy Goodman at Democracy Now! And following that, we'll go back to Morning Masterpieces from 9 to 10. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.